Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we're going to start with a warning. How often do you start a sermon with a warning? But we're going to. I got to tell you that this presentation is going to be at least PG-13. And we're going to be correct, not politically correct. Is that all right? Okay, good. In January of 2019, I was doing corporate training, which I had done for many years for a company called Cisco. Not the food people, but the people that deal in internet equipment. They're actually headquartered in San Jose. And I was in San Jose doing leadership training for a group of their executives, and they were from all over the world. We were actually using the internet to do this. Some people were in person, other people were online. And about the time, about 2 o'clock rolled around and my phone rang, and it was from the guy who hired me, who is a evangelical Christian. I said, "Steve, what's up?" He said, "What time is your training over?" I said, "About 5. He said, "Well, I got to talk to you. I got to come over." So about 4 o'clock, he came over, sat in the last hour, came up to the podium, and he said, "We got to go to another room." I said, "Okay, what's going on?" We go in the other room. He starts tearing up. I said, "Steve, what's the matter?" He says, "Frank, I don't know how to tell you this, but I got to fire you." You got to fire me? Why? What happened? Did I do something wrong in the class? He goes, "No, apparently everyone loves your class, but somebody out there Googled your name and figured out you had written this book, Correct, Not Politically Correct, How Same-Sex Marriage Hurts Everyone." I had written that in 2008. And this guy identifies as homosexual, and he said, "Since Frank doesn't agree with same-sex marriage, he can't work here." Now, keep in mind, this was actually 4 years prior to the Supreme Court implementing or imposing same-sex marriage on the entire nation by judicial fiat. And so he said, "The HR director told me that, I'm sorry, I need to fire you." So I said, "Okay, well, what can I do?" So I went home, and I had learned that the CEO of Cisco at that time was a man by the name of John Chambers. And he was actually on the Elect McCain Commission in California when Senator McCain was running against Senator Obama in the 2008 presidential election. And so I wrote him a letter, and I explained what happened to me in his company. And I said, "Actually, I'm a veteran of the United States Navy, and I appreciate your support for Senator McCain in the last election. Are you aware that Senator McCain holds the same position on same-sex marriage that I do? Are you qualified to be working at Cisco?" So I got a phone call from an attorney the next day, because I FedExed this letter, and he said, "What do you want?" And I said, "I don't really want anything except you call the dogs off other Christians." I was a vendor. I wasn't an employee. I couldn't sue them. They could just fire me because they didn't like the shirt I was wearing. But I said, "You claim to be inclusive, tolerant, and diverse. How is it that I wasn't included and not tolerated for holding a diverse view?" And he said, "Well, I can set you up with a lady who runs our diversity department." I said, "Okay, let's have a conversation." So at the time, we set up a conference call, and my friend Mike Adams, the late, great Mike Adams, was in the call with me. And the call did not go well, because I kept asking her, "How is it that I wasn't included and not hot tolerated for holding a diverse view?" And all she could do was give me platitudes back, which made absolutely no sense. So I looked at Mike, and he looked at me, and he said, "This isn't going well." I said, "I know. Let's just hang up. We got to go public with this. We got to tell the world, because they claim to be inclusive, tolerant, and diverse, and they're not." So Mike wrote the first column called "The Cisco Kid." And then the next month, I wrote a column called "Sex at Work." Do not Google that. It'll take you right to Harvey Weinstein's website. No, go to crossexamine.org, our website, and type that in the search engine there, and you will see, because in this, I explain what happened at Cisco, and I also asked the question, why are we talking about sex at work? I mean, we're supposed to have sex at work? No. Then why is corporate America obsessed about trying to talk about this at work. As long as we treat one another with respect, regardless of what people do sexually, we should be able to have a good workplace. This has nothing to do with workplace productivity. In any event, that column and other columns got put into the update of the book that Shadrach mentioned. And after we went public with this, Bank of America also fired me. It made the Christian Post. Christian consultant fired by Bank of America over gay marriage book. So I was radioactive, of course, for corporate America, and so I wound up doing this full time at crossexamine.org. And I just updated the book. It's the third edition, and that Sex at Work column and many others are in this. And what I want to talk about tonight is what's really exploded on the scene in the past, say, 5 to 10 years, and that is transgenderism, which is really what this update is all about. So I want to do three things tonight. Let's first talk about the 5 fatal flaws in transgender ideology. Then secondly, 5 crucial facts in the transgender debate. And then finally, how can you love people and protect them from the harms of trans ideology? Because as Christians, we're supposed to love people, which means that we're supposed to seek what's best for them. It doesn't mean that we're supposed to approve of everything they want to do. That's not love. So we're going to dive into this, and then if I time this just right, we'll have absolutely no time for questions. Now, we're going to have some time for Q&A, hopefully, as well. So we're going to start right here at point 1, 5 flaws in transgender ideology. Are you guys ready to go? Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the first flaw, and that is the fact that the design of the body proves there are only 2 genders. You hear people out there saying, oh, there's, 57 genders or 438 genders or whatever you want to make it. But ladies and gentlemen, if you really think about this, this isn't just true of humanity, but the entire mammalian world. You can only do 1 of 2 things. You can produce a sperm or an egg. There's no third category. And if you can't produce either, that's an incapacity, not a third capacity. So nature itself shows us that there are only 2 genders. Now, actually, when the announcement was made, that we were going to open up our Bibles tonight. This is going to be unusual because we're not actually going to open the Bible at all. Why? Because you don't need the Bible to know any of this. You don't need the Bible. You just need natural law, which comes from the same author as the Bible, God himself. God's nature and the way he's designed things can show you what the right position on this topic is. And that book, Correct Not Politically Correct, doesn't quote any Bible verses. It's not the biblical case. It's the natural law, common sense, medical case. You could give this book to an unbeliever if they're open. Now, many people are not. So nature itself shows us, by the way, I need to caveat, I love the Bible. That's all I give evidence that the Bible's true. But sometimes you don't need to quote the Bible to make your point. And it allows people who don't believe the Bible to go, hey, maybe that's a good point. You see what I'm saying here? Okay, especially in this secular culture. So the design of the body proves there's only 2 genders. Now, you might remember back in about 2018 when Brett Kavanaugh was up for Supreme Court, and he was accused of doing something in high school that somehow was sexual harassment, which I don't know about you, but I think that's probably what happens just about every high school. In any event, when Brett Kavanaugh was up for this position, we were supposed to believe every woman. But then just 4 years later, when Judge Brown got up, she was saying, what's a woman? I mean, how did we go from believe every woman to what's a woman? Are we living in a confused culture or what? She couldn't even, when she was asked, what's a woman, she couldn't even give an answer. Now, if she was smart, she would have said, it doesn't matter what my definition of woman is. What matters is what's the definition of woman in the Constitution? And that obviously is the natural law definition that we all intuitively understood till about 10 minutes ago. All right? In fact, the Babylon Bee helps us here. I don't know if you saw this, but kindergartner granted PhD in biology after correctly distinguishing boy from girl. (Laughter) Your best source in fake news. You know, the Babylon Bee is so good that you, well, sometimes when I look at it, I go, is that real? All right, let's go to the second fatal flaw. Transgender advocates on one hand say that there are all these genders. On the other hand, they must presuppose there are only two genders. Why? Because if I'm a man and I think I'm a woman, in other words, I have gender dysphoria, there's a mismatch between my psychology and my biology, I have to have some idea what a man is and some idea what a woman is to know I have this gender dysphoria. If there was no such thing as a man or a woman, transgender dysphoria would be impossible. Also, if I try and make the so-called transition from being a man to being a woman, which as we'll see here in a few minutes is impossible, but nevertheless, if I try and do that, I again have to have some idea what a man is and some idea what a woman is to try and make the transition. If there weren't those two fixed genders, this whole transgender ideology conceptually would be impossible. So this is completely contradictory. On one hand, they want to say there are hundreds or thousands of genders. On the other hand, they also must presuppose there are only two, because it would be impossible to even know you had gender dysphoria and impossible to even try and make a transition. But logic was never the strong suit of this, as you well know. That's part of the problem. So there are only two genders. By the way, I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a bit of civil war within the so-called LGBTQ community. Why? Because if the T's get their way, that there are no fixed genders, the L's, the G's, and the B's don't exist. Right? How can you be lesbian, gay, or bisexual if there aren't these genders? How could you be heterosexual if there aren't genders? Binary genders. You couldn't. So the T's are basically erasing the rest of the alphabet in there. And this is why the feminists aren't happy either. Why? Because if there are no genders, then there are no women. And if there are no women, there are no women's rights. Which is why J.K. Rowling, who is the author of the Harry Potter series, despite the fact she's probably politically left on a lot of issues, is standing strong. She's saying, with this transgender ideology, you are erasing women. I won't stand for it. And she's taken all sorts of abuse over this, of course, in the name of inclusion, tolerance, and diversity. Number three, the third fatal flaw is you can change your mind, but not your biology. And we all know this. Look, if there's a mismatch between your mind and your body, you don't change your body. It's impossible to change all 40 trillion of your cells. You can't change your DNA. You can't change your biological function. It's impossible. We all know this. And yet there are people out there saying, if you have a mismatch between your mind and your body, it's your body that needs to change. Now, we would never say this for an anorexic, right? We would never say to an anorexic, you know what? Yeah, you're right. You're overweight. Let me get you liposuction. We would say, honey, your mind's playing tricks on you. We need to get you psychiatry. We need to get you help. We need to get you mental health care. Because in most cases, you don't fix a mental problem with surgery. You fix it with psychiatry, with prayer, with counseling. I mean, look, if your daughter came up to you and said, Mom, Dad, I'm a mermaid, you wouldn't take her off the coast and drop her in the ocean, would you? Yet that's the kind of thinking that's going on here. And friends, we are not helping people by being silent on this. We are not helping people by going with the flow. People, as we're about to see here, are getting very much hurt by this. So you can change your mind, but not your biology. Number four, sex is not assigned, but discovered at birth. I mean, it's really ludicrous they try and push this, that sex is assigned at birth. As if the doctor gives birth and looks at the nurse and goes, what do you think? Looks at the mom. What do you want to call it? I don't know. In fact, sex is actually discovered normally now, long before birth. You can do all sorts of tests to figure out what's going on in there. So, this idea that sex is assigned at birth is just propaganda, and we all know it. And then finally, number five, there is no objective foundation for transgender rights. Why? Because the only way rights can exist is if God exists. Do you realize if there's no God, there's not only no transgender rights, there's no Christian rights. There's not only no right to abortion, there's no right to life. There's not only no right to same-sex marriage, there's no right to natural marriage. If there is no God, there are no rights of any kind, period. Everything's just a matter of opinion. And our founding fathers recognized this when they wrote in the Declaration of Independence, "We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men were created and endowed by their government." No, it doesn't say government. "Endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And governments are instituted among men to secure these rights." You know, your government doesn't give you rights. If they do, then you don't really have rights, you have preferences, because another government can come in and take them away. A right is something you have regardless of what anyone says about it. It comes from the right giver, God himself. Without God, there aren't rights to anything. And certainly if God does exist, he certainly doesn't want you mutilating your body. He wants you to get the mental health care you need, not to try and change something you cannot change. You cannot change your biology. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. She is really good, I'm telling you. I don't know how she's keeping up with me. Should we give her a break? Give her a hand, come on. She's going to have arthritis by the end of the night. All right, let's move on to number two, which is five crucial facts in the transgender debate. What are the five crucial facts we need to know about? Number one, most with gender dysphoria have other mental health conditions and have experienced trauma. A man by the name of Walt Heyer for many years tried to live as a woman. And when he became a Christian, he then went back to his biological sex. And Walt has a ministry called sexchangeregret.com. It's a good resource, sexchangeregret.com. And Walt says that he's interviewed thousands of people who have tried to transition. And these are the people that want to go back. And he always asks them a question. And the question is, what happened that made you feel this way? And he said 100% of the time, people that experience this point to an event, a traumatic event. It could have been, in most cases, sexual abuse or something like that. And so you might imagine the psychology of this. A boy wants to become a girl because he wants to rid himself of the organ that was abused. And so Walt says that people that have gender dysphoria in most cases have had some sort of trauma in their history. It's not just that they wake up one morning and think they're a girl or vice versa. Something happened to them, and so they need mental health care. They need treatment. And his website can help people who have gone down this road and realize it was not the right way to go. The second crucial fact is the sudden rise in transgenderism, it's often called rapid onset gender dysphoria, is social media driven. What do we mean by this? Well, a decade or so ago, gender dysphoria affected about one out of every 10,000 men who thought they were women, so very rare. But in recent years, there's been a 4,000%, 5,000% increase, some say, in young girls claiming to be boys. And the lady that wrote the seminal book on this, her name is Abigail Schreier, back in 2020, wrote the book Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. She's not a Christian, but this book is a very powerful book. And she points out that in some girls' schools she's visited, 30% of the girls are claiming to be trans. Now, how did you go from one out of every 10,000 men thinking they were women to 3,000 and 10,000 girls thinking that they're men? And her point is, and I think she's right, this is almost 100% social media driven. And when you read the testimony of young people that have gone through this, they almost always say, I was lonely, I felt bad about myself, and I went online and I found people who felt the same way, and they tried to say this was the solution. Also, when you're a teenager and you're feeling this way, not only are you looking for a solution, to a certain extent, you're also looking to stick it to mom and dad. Can we admit that? And what better way to do that, and what better way to get attention online than to claim you're trans? Everybody's going to applaud, and anybody who says this is going to be harmful to you, don't do it, is going to be shouted down as a bigot. Now, what we got to remember, or we got to inform young people on, is that it's normal to feel odd when you're going through puberty. In fact, puberty is one big long transition. That's what it is. And so it's normal to feel odd. People think, I'm feeling odd. I need to do something. I need to take puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones or, God forbid, surgery, as if that's going to solve the problem. It's not. This is normal to feel odd. And tragically, young girls in particular get on their phones. They're looking for a solution. And there are too many activist groups out there on social media who are willing to tell them this is the solution. And they're willing to try anything, only later in most cases to regret it. In fact, as we'll see here in a few minutes, Child Protective Services has largely been trained to say that anybody who does not affirm a child in their gender dysphoria is abusive. It's called gender-affirming care. Have you heard this? A nice way of saying, we're going to try and encourage young people that have this issue to go down this road, despite the fact almost every other nation has now realized how harmful it is, and we're the ones still pushing this in the United States. In fact, even some liberals have recognized how crazy this is, including Bill Maher. He was an atheist, as you know. A couple of years ago, he had a show on this called Along for the Pride, where he pointed out that the older generations hardly identify as LGBTQ at all, but the younger generations do at alarming rates. He said, if this trend continues, we'll all be gay by 2060. Now, what's Maher's point? Maher's point is that this is nearly almost completely social media driven, which is exactly what Abigail Schreier is saying. And he rightfully pointed out that, look, kids when they're young go through phases. He said, if every kid knew what they wanted to be when they were 8, the world would be filled with cowboys and princesses, but it's not. He said, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a pirate. Thank God nobody took me seriously and took me for eye removal and peg leg surgery. He's brave enough to admit that people in his own party have lost their minds on this. And we are the ones that, if we're going to love people, we have to speak up about this. Third, most people with rapid onset gender dysphoria revert back to their biological sex. In other words, their heart changes. They realize this isn't the right way to go. In fact, the studies show that 80% of young people who have rapid onset gender dysphoria have grown out of it by the time they're 18. By the time they're 26, only 4% still have it. In other words, 96% of young people have grown out of it by the time they're 26. How does it make any sense at all to try and give such people puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgery to fix a problem that's in most cases going to fix itself just with the passage of time? It makes absolutely no sense. That's one of the reasons the UK shut down their gender clinic. Another reason they're shutting it down is because they were ahead of the curve on this. They were transitioning kids years before we were, and now those kids have grown up and they're suing the clinic. Yeah, and they know they're not going to be able to survive. So their hearts change back to their biological sex. And a couple years ago, we were in here talking about this issue, should you follow your heart? And I can't go through the entire thing, the entire sermon we talked about, the entire presentation, but there's at least three reasons why you ought not follow your heart. Just very briefly. Number one, your heart is deceitful and wicked, and it wants what it wants. Your heart wants what it wants, and when you're young, your heart wants all sorts of different things that aren't reasonable and aren't right. And look, the Babylon Bee even discovered that human hearts are wicked. I don't know if you've seen this. Study finds 100% of men would eat any fruit given to them by a naked woman. You guys go, look, if I was Adam, I would have done better. No, you wouldn't. You'd do the same thing. Our hearts are fallen. They're wicked. The second reason you can't just follow your heart without moral restraint is the fact that your heart is conflicting. You often have two hearts on the same thing, don't you? Like on one hand, you might want to be in shape. On the other hand, you might love glazed donuts, right? Which heart are you going to follow? You might want to settle down and have a family. On the other hand, you might want to continue to play the field. You can't follow both hearts. You got to pick one. I don't know about you, but when I got married, it put a big damper on my dating life. You can't do both. And the third reason you can't follow your heart without moral restraint is your heart's changing. It's changing all the time. And it's especially true when you're young. Your heart goes from one thing to another. In fact, Tim Keller pointed this out, the late, great Tim Keller. He used to talk about how hearts change quickly, especially when you're young. And you probably have had this sort of phenomenon as well. I mean, do you realize that when you look back at your younger self, you kind of look at your younger self with disdain? You know, even when you're young, like when you're 15, you'll probably look back at your 10-year-old self and you go, you know, I was kind of an idiot when I was 10, right? And then when you hit 20, you look back at your 15-year-old self and you go, I was kind of an idiot when I was 15. And then when you hit 30, you look back at your 20-year-old self and you go, I was an idiot when I was 20. Do you know what this means? No matter how old you are now, you're an idiot. Because you're always going to look back and go, man, I didn't have it all together back then. Now, thankfully, this slows down. I'm 62 now. I don't look back at my 52-year-old self and say I was an idiot then. Because, you know, when you get older, hopefully your life gets more positive direction and you know what you ought to be doing and not doing. But when you're young, this stuff changes so quickly. You're trying to find your way in life. It makes absolutely no sense to make a decision that's going to alter your future dramatically to the point that you can sterilize yourself when you're 15. That makes no sense at all. No, we're not supposed to follow our hearts without moral restraint. What are we supposed to do? I think this is the second most important verse in the Bible today. The most important verse is any verse that has to do with the gospel, but the second most important verse for our culture right now is from the Old Testament. It's a proverb. Here it is. Above all else, guard your heart because everything you do flows from it. Above all else, guard your heart. Doesn't say follow your heart. It says guard it. Why? Because your heart is deceitful and wicked. It wants what it wants. Your heart is conflicting and your heart's changing. You've got to guard it. Otherwise, you're going to wind up in a very dark place. If you follow everything your heart wants to do, you're going to wind up divorced, addicted, broken, alone, and probably prematurely dead. You've got to guard your heart, not follow it blindly. Now, I'm not saying there might be occasions when God puts something on your heart, as Psalm 37 says, but it's got to be in accord with God's word, not against it. The fourth major fact is that transitioning is harmful and worsens the suicide rate, but of course it makes millions for doctors and big pharma. In fact, if anyone tries to transition, they become lifelong customers of big pharma because they have to continually take these hormones, these drugs, in order to force their bodies to go in a direction it doesn't want to go. And so big pharma, they love this. This lady is Scott Nugent. She used to be Kelly King. She tried to transition to becoming a man. Now she regrets it. Here's what she said about this, and this is on page 181 of Correct Not Politically Correct. She said, during my own transition, I had 7 surgeries. I also had a massive pulmonary embolism, a helicopter life flight ride, an emergency ambulance ride, a stress-induced heart attack, sepsis, a 17-month recurring infection due to using the wrong skin during a failed operation to give her a male member, which of course is impossible. 16 rounds of antibiotics, 3 weeks of daily IV antibiotics, the loss of all my hair, only partially successful arm reconstructive surgery, permanent lung and heart damage, a cut bladder, insomnia, induced hallucinations, oh, and frequent loss of consciousness due to pain from the hair on the inside of my urethra. All this led to a form of PTSD that made me a prisoner in my own apartment for a year. Between me and my insurance company, medical expenses exceeded $900,000. You see, nobody ever considers what you have to go through to try and do something which is impossible. Some of you may have heard of Chloe Cole. Chloe Cole is a Californian who about 4 or 5 years ago had her breasts removed when she was 15 years old. Only later was she diagnosed with autism and other comorbidities. In fact, most people that have gender dysphoria have other mental health issues. She said she had anxiety, depression, autism, and other comorbidities, but was never diagnosed until after the surgery. Why? Because doctors are now trained to not ask questions. If somebody says, look, I'm the other gender, they're just instructed to start the puberty blockers, the cross-sex hormones, and move right on to surgery. This is medical malpractice, ladies and gentlemen. And I agree with Jordan Peterson that anybody that does this to a child ought to be imprisoned. Anyway, she said she came to it. Here's what she says. Everybody my age I know who's transitioning or is dysphoric, they're either on the spectrum or they have some other learning disorder or they have depression or social anxiety or they have a history of abuse or sexual assault, neglect, or issues with the family. She got a laptop in 4th grade and that was the end of her. Now she's suing her doctors. And last summer, she was before the United States Congress, a committee, and I'm going to show you her 3-minute testimony. You might recognize the chair of the committee. It's Mike Johnson, who now is the Speaker of the House. But he wasn't at the time. So here is Chloe Cole explaining in 3 minutes what happened to her and how Congress needs to do something.
For your courage, Ms. Scanlon. Ms. Cole, you're next, and you can begin.
Good morning. My name is Chloe Cole, and I am a detransitioner. Another way to put that would be, I used to believe that I was born the wrong body, and the adults in my life, whom I trusted, affirmed my belief, and this caused me lifelong, irreversible harm. I speak to you today as a victim of one of the biggest medical scandals in the history of the United States of America. I speak to you in the hope that you will have the courage to bring the scandal to an end and ensure that other vulnerable teenagers, children, and young adults don't go through what I went through. At the age of 12, I began to experience what my medical team would later diagnose as gender dysphoria. I was well into an early puberty, and I was very uncomfortable with the changes that were happening to my body. I was intimidated by male attention, And when I told my parents that I felt like a boy, in retrospect, all I meant was that I hated puberty, that I wanted this newfound sexual tension to go away, that I looked up to my brothers a little bit more than I did to my sisters. I came out as transgender in a letter I sent on the dining room table. My parents were immediately concerned. They felt like they needed to get outside help from medical professionals, but this proved to be a mistake. It immediately set our entire family down a path of ideologically motivated deceit and coercion. The gender specialist I was taken to see told my parents that I needed to be put on puberty-blocking drugs right away. They asked my parents a simple question. Would you rather have a dead daughter or a living transgender son? The choice was enough for my parents to let their guard down, and in retrospect, I can't blame them. This is the moment that we all became victims of so-called gender-affirming care. I was fast-tracked onto puberty blockers and then testosterone. The resulting menopausal-like hot flashes made focusing on school impossible. I still get joint pains and weird pops in my back, but they were far worse when I was on the blockers. A month later, when I was 13, I had my first testosterone injection. It's caused permanent changes to my body. My voice will forever be deeper, my jawline sharper, my nose longer, my bone structure permanently masculinized, my Adam's apple more prominent, my fertility unknown. I look in the mirror sometimes, and I feel like a monster. I had a double mastectomy at 15. They tested my amputated breast for cancer. Now I was cancer-free, of course. I was perfectly healthy. There was nothing wrong with my still-developing body or my breasts, other than that, as an insecure teenage girl, I felt awkward about it. After my breasts were taken away from me, the tissue was incinerated. Before I was able to legally drive, I had a huge part of my future womanhood taken from me. I will never be able to breastfeed. I struggle to look at myself in the mirror at times. I still struggle to this day with sexual dysfunction. And I have massive scars across my chest, and the skin grafts that they took of my nipples are weeping fluid today. And they were grafted into a more masculine positioning, they said. After surgery, my grades in school plummeted. Everything that I went through did nothing to address my underlying mental health issues that I had. And my doctors, with their theories on gender, thought that all my problems would go away as soon as I was surgically transformed into something that vaguely resembled a boy. Their theories were wrong. The drugs and surgeries changed my body, but they did not and could not change the basic reality that I am and forever will be a female. When my specialist first told my parents that they could have a dead daughter or a live transgender son, I wasn't suicidal. I was a happy child who struggled because she was different. However, at 16, after my surgery, I did become suicidal. I'm doing better now, but my parents almost got the dead daughter promised to them by my doctors. My doctors had almost created the very nightmare they said they were trying to avoid. So what message do I want to bring to American teenagers and their families? I didn't need to be lied to. I needed compassion. I needed to be loved. I needed to be given therapy to help me work through my issues, not affirmed in my delusion that by transforming into a boy, it would solve all my problems. We need to stop telling 12-year-olds that they were born wrong, that they are right to reject their own bodies and feel uncomfortable with their own skin. We need to stop telling children that puberty is an option, that they can choose what kind of puberty they will go through, just so they can choose what clothes to wear or what music to listen to. Puberty is a rite of passage to adulthood, not a disease to be mitigated. Today, I should be at home with my family celebrating my 19th birthday, and instead I'm making a desperate plea to my elected representatives. Learn the lessons from other medical scandals like the opioid crisis, to recognize that doctors are human too, and sometimes they are wrong. My childhood was ruined along with thousands of detransitioners that I know through our networks. This needs to stop. You alone can stop it. Enough children have already been victimized by this barbaric pseudoscience. Please let me be your final warning. Thank you.
Today's your birthday?
Yes.
You're a beautiful, brave woman.
By the way, the suicide rate prior to any sort of transitioning is 13 times higher than the general public for people that struggle with gender dysphoria. After so-called surgery, There's about a honeymoon period of about 10 years, and then the suicide rate rises to 19 times higher than the general public. There are other issues going on. It's not gender dysphoria. There are other issues going on that cause people to want to commit suicide. The solution is not to try and do the impossible. The solution is to get them the mental health care they need. Finally, the government is coming for your kids. You may know in California, I'll put that up again, don't worry about it. You may have heard of Abigail Martinez and her daughter, Yaley. At 14 years old, this girl was taken from Miss Martinez, who is a devout evangelical Christian who comes from El Salvador, because she wouldn't affirm her daughter who wanted to be a boy. She was taken by the California authorities, put into a boys' school where she was abused there, and then at 19 years old, she stepped in front of a train to kill herself. And Miss Martinez said, "Gender ideology murdered my daughter." California is the worst state, you may know, that they hide from parents when kids are having these issues. They hid it from her and wouldn't let her have custody of her own daughter. And then President Biden in 2022, March 31st, Trans Visibility Day, came out and through his HHS, a division within the government, basically came out and said, "We may take your child from you if you don't affirm your child in gender-affirming care." This is in the book. I don't have time to cite all the details here. You may have also heard of Scott Smith, who was a father in Loudoun County, and his daughter was raped in a bathroom by a boy claiming to be a girl. When he went to the school board to complain about this, someone in the audience said it never happened. That resulted in a scuffle. Right now, he has sued the Loudoun County Public School System for $30 million because they tried to cover it up, which is why Governor Youngkin in Virginia pardoned him for what happened in that school board meeting. As of right now, children in four states have been taken from their parents at least: California, Indiana, Montana, and Virginia. Some of those are red states, but that's because Child Protective Services in those states is sort of the deep state. They do what they want. And they're taught that if a child is gender dysphoric, you have to affirm that child, and if the parent doesn't want to do it, it's abuse. Thomas Sowell, who's now 94 years old and says everything well, said this: "Ours may become the first civilization destroyed not by the power of our enemies, but by the ignorance of our teachers and the dangerous nonsense they are teaching our children. In an age of artificial intelligence, they are creating artificial stupidity." Of course, there are great teachers out there, but the whole system has now been infected. And you know whose fault it is? Sorry, friends, go home and look in the mirror. It's Christians that haven't been engaged enough. We haven't been salt and light enough, despite the fact you've got the best pastor in the country who continues to urge you to get involved, and still many of us are sitting on our hands. See? You're sitting on your hands. Only like five people applauded that. So, here are the five fatal flaws. Don't take your phone out. I'm going to give you a way to get the whole presentation. Don't worry about it. Here are the five crucial facts. Now, sorry, you guys aren't fast enough. How can we love people on this issue? How can we protect them from the harms of trans ideology? First of all, three questions. What does love require of us? It doesn't require approval. In fact, we'll talk about it this Sunday. Love does not require approval. Love requires you to seek what's best for the other person, and that often requires you to stand in the way of evil. Secondly, well, can we legislate morality? Newsflash, ladies and gentlemen, that's all you can legislate. Every law declares one behavior right and the opposite behavior wrong. The only question is, whose morality will we legislate? Tragically, we've been legislating immorality lately. And Christians have to get more engaged to protect their neighbors from evil. And what questions should we ask? All right, I'm going to give you a list of questions. Again, I'm going to give you these questions in a handout that you can get. I'll put it on the screen here in a few minutes. These are questions that you can ask somebody whom you love who comes to you, say a child who claims he or she is trans. Here are some questions you can ask. First of all, if this happens to you, do not freak out. If you freak out, what's the kid going to say? Man, that really set mom off. I'm never coming to her again for anything. Say, hey, thank you for telling me. Then go through some questions. Here are the questions. What do you mean that you are trans? Get them to explain it. Secondly, how did you come to that conclusion? Why do you think this is so? What evidence do you have for this? Then ask, what happened that made you feel this way? Maybe there's something that happened to them that you don't know about and you need to know about it. What happened that made you feel this way? Do feelings always tell you the truth? Do feelings always tell you the truth? No, of course not. In fact, many times you have to resist your feelings because they're leading you down the wrong path. And you could ask, do feelings ever change? Well, honey, a month ago you weren't trans. Now you are. Do you think your feelings might change again? Well, in fact, they will. Why? Because have you ever considered that nearly all people your age who have these feelings grow out of them? At least 80% by 18 and 96% by 26. You need to know that. Ask them questions. Also, how much have you read about the long-term effects of doing this? How much have you read about the long-term effects of doing this? The answer is going to be, I haven't. Do you know there's no protocol for doing a sex change operation? Because it's impossible. They have techniques to try and make you more like the other sex, but you can't become the other sex. You can mutilate your body or shape your body in such a way that you might look more like the other sex, but you're never going to be the other sex. It's impossible. And you're not whatever you think about. If you were what you thought about, most men would be women and most women would be chocolate. Right? Finally, if Jesus, who sacrificed himself for you, wanted you to live according to the biology he gave you, would you obey him? And see what they say. This is a variation of a question I ask a lot of people. If Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? A lot of times the answer is no. Why? It's not a head problem, it's a heart problem. They don't want it to be true. They want to be God over their own lives. But ask the question to see where they are. Now, how about questions you can ask your woke boss? Some of you are hiding under your desks in corporate America. Because the inclusion, tolerance, and diversity police are not very inclusive, tolerant, or diverse, are they? So here are some questions to ask. When we say we value tolerance, what do we mean by tolerance? What do we mean by inclusion? What do we mean by diversity? I guarantee you they're not going to be able to answer without contradicting themselves. Because you know what this really means? They only tolerate, include values which go against natural law, biblical values. Any other value, they'll accept, but they're never going to accept the true values. But call them on it. What do we mean by that? Also, do we think it's right to ask employees to violate their conscience? The answer better be no. Then you can say, great, please do not ask me to violate mine then. If they say yes, it's okay to violate our conscience, they may be in violation of United States law. And if you ever get into trouble like this, you need to call the Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, They have a team of attorneys that will represent you pro bono, particularly on religious liberty issues. Does everyone have the right to live their authentic selves? That's really kind of the mantra of today. You get to live your authentic self, right? Of course they're going to say yes. That's why we do all this. Your next question, even me? I get to live my authentic self too? I can live as a Christian and follow the dictates of Jesus or the dictates of my conscience? Oh, no, you can't do that. You have to do what we say. Well, how come I don't get to live my authentic self, but everybody else does? It's contradictory, friends. Values like this are contradictory. Why are we talking about sex in the workplace? What does it have to do with workplace productivity? You're going to get crickets. Because it has nothing to do with workplace productivity. And even many of the HR directors, if they were to sit back and think about it, would go, yeah, why are we even talking about this? And then you should ask, do we all have to have the same political, religious, or moral beliefs to work here? No? Then why are we pressing people to take firm positions on controversial political and moral issues that have little to do with workplace productivity? Why are we doing this? Is this just groupthink? Is this just being politically correct? Why are we doing this? Ask the questions. Now, here are some other places you can get help on this. Write these down. Sexchangeregret.com. Also check out childparentrights.org. And then look up articles by Laura Bryant Hanford. I talked to her today. I called my friend Jay Richards at the Heritage Foundation. I said, who knows about this stuff? This lady sent me some amazing information in text form that I don't have time to share with you. But she is dialed in. She's a Princeton graduate, and she has five of her own kids, and you just better not cross this mama bear. I'm telling you, she knows her stuff. She actually writes for The Federalist, and if you Google her name, the first article that comes up, you need to read. Now, if you want this entire presentation, follow the link for that QR code, and I'm going to send you this presentation and about 10 others for free in a PDF format. If that QR code doesn't work, you can get to the same place by typing the word evidence or texting the word evidence, no punctuation, just the word evidence to that phone number, 855-909-0582. So can people watching on the internet. You can do that the same way. And what we're going to do now with just about 20 minutes to go is to take some questions, and we're going to have a line right here for Q&A. I think someone's going to have a mic down here. That's what I was told anyway. Yep, here it is right here. And so since no one likes to ask the first question, let's move right on to the second question. Second question in this aisle right over here. Yes, ma'am, what's your name?
Stephanie Whitley.
Stephanie, go ahead.
Holy Spirit, help me here.
Before we get into it, just try and get to a question if you can.
Okay.
Go right to the question.
Okay. How do you think the church can be offensive and proactive in solving this issue instead of defensive?
Yeah, excellent
instead
question.
Instead of shaking your finger at the congregation saying you're not doing enough,
mm-hmm.
going to school board meetings, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. Mm-hmm. It's an overwhelming thing. I've dealt with it in Virginia. I went to the church in Loudoun County. I was working for the federal government, raising this issue, talking about it. I came under investigation for it. I stood up.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Thank you. We need to do that. Now, it may seem overwhelming, and it is, but that's okay. You just do what's right and leave the results to God. Do whatever you can do, whatever part of the world you're in, whatever little thing you can do, do it. Prayer, obviously, getting involved at the school board, making sure that you're voting the right people into office. You know who really did a good job on this in the school board situation is Ron DeSantis in Florida, because he actually endorsed school board members he knew would do the right thing, and he won, or through his endorsement, they won most of those races. So we need to be engaged, and it's not just a political issue, it's just with Young people, here's one thing you might want to do. If your kid is under 16, they ought not be on this. I'm telling you. And it's going to be a war to get them off it, but sorry. Would you rather have your kid get into a situation where they are sterilizing themselves or they're just mad at you because you won't give them a phone? Yes, sir.
Hi, Frank. I find it often difficult to do quality research on some of these topics online due to just how big tech is. Do you mind giving like a SparkNotes explanation on how these individuals are even able to sue their doctors from previously? It's just very perplexing to see how the doctors don't have that power as well, and how we can go about.
They don't have that. What doctors don't have what power?
To be able to not be sued over something like that, considering that we can't sue over the vaccine and such, they have those protections. I just don't understand how it's not something that covers them
for
here.
Well, one reason, and if you could bring up that PowerPoint again for a second, there are a lot of good resources in that center, childparentrights.org website. If you go to that website and click on resources, you'll see a lot of data there on this issue. As I understand it, the big issue that these young people are able to leverage to sue their doctors is that when their doctors did this to them, since they were minors, they couldn't give informed consent. And that's the real big issue there. That's how they're able to sue. And that's why, one reason why gender dysphoria clinics are closing in the UK. Even liberal Scandinavian countries now are saying this is wrong, we ought not be doing this. Yes, sir. Go ahead, sir. Yes.
My question is, I just want to know, why is it that when, for example, in my work environment, I'm not afraid to speak up for my beliefs, and I'm not afraid to offend somebody, possibly lose my job. Why? But at the same time, I see a lot of people just whisper to me in agreement. And why do you think a lot of guys are, you know, especially men, are actually afraid to speak up, especially in a work environment?
Because people operate more by incentive than what's right or wrong. Because we're incentivized to not speak up so we can keep our jobs. That's why. In fact, if you really want to know why most people do what they do, just look at the three great motivators: sex, money, and power. That's why many of us do what we do. That's why we sin, by the way, because sex, money, and power are good things. In fact, they're so good, we'll often take shortcuts to get them. And if we're incentivized by any of those things, despite the fact that we know doing something's wrong, we'll do it anyway. In fact, I was just reading an excerpt from a book recently where the author said, "How many people do I think are really crazy out there? I don't know, maybe 3 or 4%. But how many people do I think would do crazy things if they're incentivized to do them? Oh, probably 50% or more." In fact, you know, researchers into genocide, 100% of researchers who research genocide say that genocide is committed by average everyday people. And I submit to you that many of us, if we lived in Nazi Germany in World War II, would have acquiesced to being Nazi concentration camp guards. Oh, I would never do that. No, you would. Because our hearts are evil, and our hearts are driven by incentives more than we're driven by what's right. Because we're fallen. Yes, sir.
Hello. I had a question. I don't want to say who it is just to protect them in their job, but I know somebody that does HR.
Uh-huh.
And this is exactly what's happening at the workplace right now. They're bringing, they just started doing DEI or something like that,
yeah,
or their inclusion and all that. The problem is that where they work at, it does have a lot to do with sex because it's about sex trafficking. So I don't know how.
What's about sex trafficking?
The workplace, they help sex traffic kids.
Okay.
So they're bringing inclusion and all these ideologies into the workplace. So my question is, she asked me, how do I, you know, what am I supposed to do? So
I would ask questions. What is the objective of the DEI program? What are you trying to do? And see what they say. Because you might say to them, I don't know if you recognize this, but there might be some unintended consequences of this DEI program, where we're hiring people who aren't qualified to get into this work, we're hiring them based on either their gender or based on their race or something like that, which might have no effect on the job they're supposed to do, when we could have hired somebody who was better qualified but didn't meet the box that you wanted to check in order to do this. I don't know if you know this, by the way. They've actually added a letter to DEI, J for Justice. Now they call it JEDI. Have you heard this? JEDI? Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. In fact, a friend of mine was at a business meeting in Charlotte, where I'm from, and the CEO got up and said, I'm for JEDI, Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. And I wish I was there. I would have raised my hand and said, sir, does your secretary make the same amount you do? Oh, she doesn't. Well, you're not for equity then. You're for justice. Because justice and equity are opposites. Justice says you get what you deserve. Equity says everyone gets the same. Why is your secretary not getting the same as you? Because it's not just. You bring much more value and money into the company, so you should be paid more. So it's a contradictory world out there. And we just need to ask questions. The best way to get people to think about this is not to come out and scold them with why this is wrong. Ask them questions and get them to try and explain why they think it's right. And they're going to have trouble. Yes, sir.
Why? Why do you think government agencies and corporations are pushing this? What do you think their end goal is? And do you see a connection between transgenderism and transhumanism?
Yes, in fact, according to the lady I put up there earlier, Laura Bryant Hanford, she says on the transgenderism side, much of this is being pushed into government agencies and also non-government agencies by billionaires who are trying to get some sort of results. Not just George Soros, there's other billionaires out there who basically are trying to undermine the civilization that the West has developed by going after the nuclear family. That's really what's behind all this. And we, since we're incentivized to be quiet, to get along, don't say much. Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Hi. Are there any online organizations that I could donate to that are, like, against the transgender movement?
I don't know if that organization I had up there a minute ago, childparentrights.org, is a 501c. It probably is because of the .org on it. So you might go there to try and give to them. That's one group. There are probably many others. That's the one that Laura sent me and said there's great resources on there, and there are. So that's the only one that I know about. Of course, sexchangeregret.com is another good one, so you could check either of those two out. This group, parentrights.org, I think gets involved politically as well, so you might want to check them out. Yes, ma'am?
Yes, I just wanted to ask, you said that it takes place towards children, the transgenderism towards children in social media primarily, but I also was wondering that it also takes place in the classrooms as well.
Yes, it does.
And I was wondering if that topic does come up in schools, how do I even face that?
Well, I'll tell you what a pastor from Idaho did. His son was in class in Idaho, and this was brought up. The teacher got up and said, look, if a boy thinks he's a girl, you got to treat him like a girl. And he raised his hand. He said, well, if the boy thinks he's an animal, should I treat him like an animal? She said, yes. And then he said, what if the boy thinks he's a deer? Should I treat him like a deer? Yes. What if I have a hunting license? Can I shoot him? And she said, no. And he said, why not? You just said I got to treat him. Get out. She just kicked him out of the class. Look. The logic behind this just isn't there, and you need to call them on it. Yes, sir, go ahead.
Hello. I was just wondering, what's the difference between a relationship that cannot reproduce versus same-sex relationships? And if we use the God's design argument, why does God's design matter in this case?
Say that last part again. I didn't quite get that.
And if we use the God's design argument, why does God's design matter in this case?
Why does God's design matter? Well, we know that God has created us male and female to procreate, that nobody would be here, heterosexual, homosexual, transgender, unless male and female came together. And by the way, the reason the government's involved in marriage is to legally and to legally recognize that man-woman relationship over every other relationship is because only a man and a woman can procreate and bring forth the next generation in the best possible manner. In other words, the purpose of marriage is to perpetuate and stabilize society. That's why the government should favor the man-woman relationship over every other relationship. Now, I've already forgotten what the second half of your question was, so.
Oh, sorry, hold on. Is it okay if I just repeat my question?
Yeah, go ahead, because okay, so, maybe I didn't get it completely. Yeah. Go ahead.
So I asked, what's the difference between a relationship that cannot reproduce versus same-sex relationships? And if we use the God's design argument, why does God's design matter in this case?
Okay, yeah, well, there are sterile couples, right, that are male-female. But that's the exception rather than the rule. And even a sterile couple shows the rest of the world what a right relationship is, what the normative relationship is, the relationship that God wanted, even if they don't bring forth children. Also, that relationship keeps that man off the street from impregnating other women who are not his wife. And so it is a social good, even if they don't have children. But that's the exception rather than the rule. The rule is, and the only way to bring forth children that are brought up in a man-woman relationship that's best for the child is when a man and a woman come together to procreate and bring forth the next generation. The kids turn out much better in a man-woman relationship than any other relationship. Sure, there are exceptions, but overall, men-women bring up children the best, and a same-sex relationship always, always, always prevents a child from having either a mother or a father. Yes, yes, ma'am.
My niece used to identify as non-binary and then as transgender. Thankfully, she's come out of that, praise God, with no hormones, no surgery.
Uh-huh.
I'm really happy about that. My sister is not a Christian. Her mother is not a Christian. And she is quite feminist. J.K. Rowling is a feminist, as you mentioned, but she is actually in the minority of feminists who believe that they actually have a specific term for her called trans exclusionary radical feminist.
Yeah.
So they kind of exclude her from their group because right. of this. Most feminists think that, well, they believe
hey,
that...
Hey, forgive me. Just go to the question.
I'm sorry. Okay.
We're almost out of time. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm trying to say, how can we as a church reject the concept of feminism? Because it is feminism that says that men and women are equal, and if men and women are equal, then they can switch.
Let me just say this. The reason I like women is because they are different. Right? I mean, can we please state the obvious? Men and women are not the same. And by the way, if men and women were the same, nobody would be trying to transition. Right? And if men and women were the same, nobody would be arguing for same-sex marriage. The reason people want same-sex marriage is because they don't want to marry somebody of the opposite sex because they know somebody of the opposite sex is different than somebody of the same sex. So the whole idea behind this presupposes that men and women are different. And in Christianity, men and women are essentially equal, but they have different roles, different functions. The same way that the Father and Son are equal, they're both God, but they have different roles and different functions. And the Son willfully deferred to the Father because he did that on his own volition. And if you're saying, for example, that you can't, well, let me put it this way. Kathy Keller, who was the wife of Tim Keller, who died not long ago, said this: if you're a woman and you're in a relationship with your Christian husband and you can't submit to him when he lawfully and rightly goes in a direction, if you're saying you can't do that, you're saying that you can't follow your Savior. Because your Savior against what he personally wanted to do, submitted to the will of the Father. You remember when Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, he says, if there's any other way, Father, that you could spare this cup from me, please spare this cup from me, but if not, not my will, your will. And he went to the cross, even though he didn't want to go to the cross, because he wanted to save us. Now, I'm not saying that if you're in a Christian marriage and your husband tells you to do something immoral that you ought to submit, you ought not submit. But we're talking a normal situation. You should. Just like the son submitted to the father. Okay, I'm sorry, but this has got to be the last question. Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Frank. My name is Hannah Turn, and my question for you is, do you have the biblical foundations and scriptural references for what you spoke about tonight?
Yes, but the reason I didn't use them was because I'm trying to reach a broader audience. If we just quote the Bible, there are going to be people out there that are going to say, well, that's just the Bible. I don't have to listen to that. But if you can listen to common sense and listen to natural law and show that it lines up with the Bible, which it does, then we can, I think, make some more progress. And I think when you go into the public square in today's world, if you just quote Bible verses at people, they're not even going to hear you. They're going to marginalize you. So be as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves. In other words, use the means God has given you to try and convince a lost and dying world to go in the right direction. It doesn't mean you have to quote Bible verses all the time. As much as I love the Bible, I spend my time on college campuses presenting evidence that the Bible's true, but if I'm trying to talk to a non-believer about an issue like this, I can actually just use common sense, the natural law, the medical evidence, and point out that the direction they want to go in is not the right direction, if that makes sense. All right? All right, thank you. Let's close in prayer. Father, we know this is a very difficult issue. It's affected people in this room, families in this room, families watching online. We know that sometimes the world appears to be changing so quickly and we're flat-footed. We don't know what to do. We don't know what to say. I pray that if there's anything that's been said tonight, it would help families who are going through this difficulty, give them some insights on how to deal with issues that we haven't had to deal with to this point in our history. I pray for people that have gender dysphoria, for people that are struggling with their sexuality, struggling with their identity. I pray that you'd be directing them to your son, Jesus. From him we get our identity. We don't achieve our identity, we receive our identity from him based on what he's done for us. So I pray that we would all, when we can, speak up wherever we are and ask the right questions to get people to think and reconsider the direction that they're going in, which is away from you, away from common sense, away from natural law, away from design, and into a very dark area that hurts many people. I also pray for our friend and pastor, Jack Hibbs, who is sick today. I pray your healing hand would be on him. I thank you for his leadership here. I thank you for the entire team here. And I thank you for this congregation who's motivated to follow you. I pray, no matter what the cost, no matter what the counter incentive, because we're here to serve you. We're here to build your kingdom, not our own. Bring us back here Sunday safely. In the meantime, give us opportunities to share the truth. In the name of Jesus who died for us, amen. 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 See you Sunday.